Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Table Talk, a special episode, really. We thought lots of our listeners will have been watching the tributes and listening to all the reactions of the Queen's death this weekend, whether it was King Charles III's address or maybe the session in Parliament where Boris Johnson, Theresa May and others spoke. You know, Graham and I, we didn't have any particularly personal anecdotes or anything we thought we could add to the conversation. But we thought it might be helpful for you, our listeners, if we could just help process the events of the last 4 days and think about how we respond to it, and particularly explore the Christian response to the death of the Queen. And to help us do that, we've got Rupert Standring, C of E vicar in Fulham at St Peter's Church, and Becca Taylor, we could call friend of the podcast, and she was previously a journalist. She's reported for Sky and others, and latterly a royal correspondent for Yahoo. So welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Welcome to Table Talk. I thought we'd just begin, guys, with what we've been kind of listening to, watching, how we found the last 4 days.
I've been switching between BBC and Sky News relentlessly for the last 4 days or so, I think. I remember at one point I was trying to get somewhere in time for King Charles III's first address to the nation, and I didn't make it. So I was walking down the street, streaming it on my phone. I didn't even have time to get my headphones out of my bag. I just had my phone in my ear, just wanted to hear everything. So yeah, news junkie mode is on full at the moment for me.
Okay, Emery?
Yeah, a little bit less committed than a former royal correspondent.
We'd expect that.
But I guess like everyone from about Thursday lunchtime when the news started sounding bad, and actually beginning to think ahead to how we could or should respond as a church. And if the Queen were to die as she did before Sunday, and how, what would be most helpful in that regard. But once the news came through that she had died that afternoon, watched the telly late into the night and really wanted to do that, wanted to be reminded, wanted to connect with, I guess, what millions of others were doing that same evening, and just remembering what a great queen she was. And then all the stuff that unfolds that I think would be fair to say this country does very, very well,
yes,
even though most of it is arcane and yeah, and almost pointless, if I can put it in a nice
way. Careful, Becca's looking at you.
but it just draws you in. It draws you into the significance of the occasion, even if you don't understand all the... Well, I know Becca does, but... And found that absolutely fascinating and just wanted to keep listening, keep learning, actually, what happens. This has never happened in most people's lifetime. Although the first person who walked into church this morning, I said, oh, this has never happened in most people's lives. Well, it happened in mine. I remember it when... so I found...
The one person.
I found... He did then admit that he was 3 months old at the time, so he didn't quite have full recall. But yeah, this is for many of us today a unique experience, and therefore wanting to sort of understand it.
Definitely. And Becca, I mean, how would you sort of summarize the mixture of emotions that you're seeing? I mean, you say you've been going between BBC, Sky News, watching a lot of coverage. How would you sort of summarize the mixture of emotions that the nation are sort of feeling at the moment?
I think I've lost track of the number of times I've heard people refer to the Queen as the nation's grandmother. Mm. I think that's fair. I think we all feel a little bit like we've lost a member of our family. There is something about the Queen and that pomp and ceremony that connects us to our past as a nation. And so when she goes, when she dies, that is the end of that whole era. So it's not just that we lose a family member, but it's that we enter another part of history. And when you think about what we've been through in the last few years as a world, as well as a nation, I think it's really natural that with such a public death, we then start thinking about the deaths within our own families, maybe. We had those poignant images last spring when the Queen couldn't go to her own husband's funeral properly, really. And that was the experience of millions of people across the country as well. So there's a lot of sadness, but also I'm seeing a lot of surprise, because I think people didn't realize they were going to be this sad. They weren't ready to be this overwhelmed by it, and they weren't ready to think that it would bother them. We all knew that it was coming fairly soon, the rate that she was declining and the fact that she was doing a lot less, I think maybe gave a few of us a bit of a hint that she wasn't going to be around for much longer. But it's a shock to us. Even Republicans are sad.
Yeah. I think that's what's quite interesting for me is I've spoken to quite a lot of people about this, and there's been there has been a bit of a mix of feelings on it. But I think the overwhelming thing is that, you know, everyone has that same recognition that she was an amazing woman. And actually there's that sense of grief of just someone amazing and historic and iconic has passed, you know. And I think regardless of how they feel about the monarchy or about kings or queens, there is that sense of sadness and loss in pretty much everyone that I've spoken to.
Were you surprised? You mentioned that everyone's kind of being caught out. Did you, presumably as a royal correspondent, you might have even written pieces ready to go, or do you know what I mean? Had things there that you knew you would say if that happened?
Yeah, I think when you used to cover them and when you know kind of a fair amount about what is about to happen and what's going on, but you're not the one that's having to sit there and write it, you get more time with your own thoughts to actually process what's going on and to appreciate it. So I've been thinking about my former colleagues in newsrooms over London, thinking about everything that they're kind of going through, and partly thinking, oh, that's a relief that I don't have to work till crazy o'clock anymore.
We probably wouldn't have been able to get you on the podcast. Let's be honest.
I'd have been at work.
Let's be honest.
But yeah, knowing that you know all the stuff, but you have the space to process it as well. So it's a different reaction, definitely, than if I had still been working there.
Well, I was reflecting that many of our listeners, and perhaps like the majority of the UK, they wouldn't necessarily call themselves particularly religious. Maybe they'd loosely call themselves Christian. But it's on occasions such as these that people still find themselves looking to the church and here, I guess, the Church of England, to give them some reassurance and direction and how to respond. And I just thought, Rupert, is that something that you've seen true at all in Fulham at your church? Is there anything you were saying, how do we kind of help people respond to this? What have you done differently this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that was the focus of my thinking at the end of the week. And I think times have moved on and people grieve differently, corporately, personally. I wasn't expecting floods of people to be rushing to church through open doors. We've had a few, a little trickle, but regardless of that, I wanted to be ready for those people and ready for people who would be here week by week, who I knew were here and who would be wanting that help. And we were due, as it happens, to launch a new teaching series, but it suddenly dawned on me that actually that is not what people have uppermost in their minds. And much as I might be thinking that would be helpful, I had to ditch that and think, no, what would be more helpful than Ezekiel chapter 1? And of course, the answer is lots and lots of things. it's not difficult to think of something that would be more helpful at a time like this. And I think particularly because, and we've kind of been reminded of this, that the kind of the steadfastness, the stabilizing presence that she was, we had probably taken for granted a bit because it was just always there. You take that away, you take her away, and suddenly the problems that we're facing, not just personally, but as a nation, suddenly loom much larger. And we're going into what was already a challenging autumn. And now it looks like a much steeper gradient that we've got to climb. With problems on every side and without that reassurance of someone at the top who's that unifying presence. So that, I think, was what I was wanting to help people with, that sense of, oh no, we've got an uncertain future ahead and we've lost someone who would have been a real help as we face that as a nation.
You said that Ezekiel 1 probably wouldn't be the place to go to. Are there any Bible equivalents of losing a leader like Queen Elizabeth? With a nation in a similar situation to ours, yeah, where would you go to?
Where would you go? I was floundering around a little bit. but one of the great things about being part of a church network is lots of help, lots of wisdom, lots of chat about that. It was very busy on Thursday evening, Friday morning. And one of the pastors, a good friend, Matt Fuller at Christchurch Mayfair, really helpfully said, well, I don't know what anyone else is doing, but this is where I'm going. And I looked at what he posted and I thought, that's a great bit of the Bible. He was going to the end of the book of Deuteronomy where Moses, the leader of God's people, who's been the leader of God's people for a really long time, in fact, the only leader that most people would ever have known. And he himself is, he knows he's going to die because God has told him he's going to die, but he is taking the opportunity to prepare the people for his death and to say to them, I'm about to die, but do not be seized with fear at what lies ahead. Be full of hope, be full of faith. And wrapped into the package is not only the passing of a great leader who'd helped the nation, but is the stepping into his shoes of an untested leader, a man called Joshua, who actually in time proved to be a really capable leader under God. But at that time, no one knew that. And again, Charles has been in waiting for a long time, but he is yet to prove himself as our sovereign. And that will take time. You know, you can't hold that against him. He hasn't had the opportunity. But it just felt like those two parallels, the passing of a great, and I'm sure that's why Matt Fuller thought that's the place to go. And generally what Matt Fuller says, I just follow.
And Ruth, so we're talking a comparison here of Moses and Queen Elizabeth. I mean, how do those two compare in their status as leaders?
Well, here's one of the interesting things. Let me just quote to you from, this is a Queen's Christmas broadcast, 1957. She said this, so this is very early on, 4 years into her reign. "I cannot lead you into battle. I do not give you laws or administer justice, but I can do something else. I can give you my heart and my devotion to these old islands and to all the peoples of our Brotherhood of Nations." And I thought what was interesting about that is that Moses can match her in heart and devotion. He loved God's people, but he had actually done all those things. He had led them into battle. He had given them laws. He had administered justice. And so in that sense, although he was leader just for 40 years, he didn't quite make the 70 that a majesty managed. He was dearly loved and absolutely central to the survival of God's people then. And so there seemed to be a parallel between those two. He had got them out of all sorts of scrapes in the desert. And I think Queen Elizabeth has got us out all sorts of scrapes in the 70 years that she's been our queen.
So go on. So what comfort, this is unusual in the sense that Moses knows he's going to die. And how does God via Moses help prepare people for such a great loss, like a Moses or for us, a Queen Elizabeth figure?
Okay, so here's the key thing. I mean, this is kind of his pep talk, is a bit banal, but this is his kind of, guys, don't worry.
Yes.
God has got this.
Yeah.
And he says this, "Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I'm now 120 years old. I'm no longer able to lead you." Fair enough. He's given it a good crack.
Yeah.
"The Lord said to me, you shall not cross the River Jordan into the promised land." And then this is the key bit. "The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. The Lord will deliver them to you." He's absolutely crystal clear. I won't be with you, but before you start panicking and thinking, "Well, we can't do it because we haven't got Moses," you need to know that God himself will be with you. And that's a huge promise to give to people at a kind of watershed moment in their lives where they're facing a really uncertain, I mean, really challenging and threatening future. And to know that they were doing that without Moses, but with God himself. And I think Moses is really saying, "That's much better than me.
Yeah.
You've got someone much greater than me. He himself is committed to you." And then as you think about that, for those who would call themselves followers of Jesus Christ, the idea that right at the end of that, he says, he will never leave you or forsake you. So not is he going to be with you, but he will never leave you or forsake you. And as you hear that as a Christian, you immediately think of the words that Jesus said to his followers, "I will be with you till the end of the age. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you." And so I think, you know, when those of us who like the Queen herself, put our faith in Christ and was explicit about that and took opportunity after opportunity in her Christmas broadcast, particularly to speak of her faith in Christ, when you are facing uncertainty and when you are facing something where perhaps you'd relied on the strength of others, just to be able to trust him, to know him, to lean into him. That's what she did. She was explicit about being able to do that. She frequently spoke of her trust in Christ. Here we go. This is her Christmas message, 2002. "I know just how much I rely on my faith to guide me through the good times and the bad. Each day is a new beginning. I know that the only way to live my life is to try to do what is right, to take the long view, to give of my best in all that the day brings, and to put my trust in God. I draw strength from the message of hope in the Christian gospel." I mean, couldn't be more clear. That's where she's getting her strength. That's where she's getting her hope. And she's doing it day by day.
So, Becca, maybe just to come to you for a second, because you've, you know, covered this for a while. You know, as Ruth's saying there, and we're quoting her words from that Christmas message in 2002. I mean, it's very explicit. But to what extent do you think the Queen herself understood and believed this message, that God was with her, and in fact, more broadly, that God was with us if we accept him into our lives? Do you think she was very aware of that and conscious of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Ru has said, the Queen's made it so clear over the years that this is what she believes, and she's used public opportunities. Just to quote a different one, back in 2016, she said, "In my first Christmas broadcast in 1952, I asked the people of the Commonwealth and the Empire to pray for me. I have been and remain very grateful to you for your prayers and to God for his steadfast love. I have indeed seen his faithfulness." Mm. And I love that. I just love that last line. "I have seen his faithfulness." Mm. This is a woman who has been head of state for 70 years, who has seen dozens of prime ministers and presidents, who has dealt with matters of global importance every day. And every day she turns to God, and every day he is faithful to her.
It's interesting there that you say, "Pray for me." And she has quite an unenviable task when you put it like that, in terms of just the magnitude of what she is dealing with and on her shoulders. But maybe even a greater unenviable task would be taking over from her. And I just wondered, Rupert, what would you say to King Charles III now if you kind of had your audience with him? Could you offer him any comfort? Because it just seems so, like you said, obviously he could do a great job, but it just seems a mountain right now.
I mean, again, just coming back to the parallel with Moses and Joshua, and Moses takes Joshua aside, so he gives him his own sort of personal pep talk, and he says this to them. He summoned Joshua and said to him, "In the presence of all Israel," so they're all listening, "be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors to give them. And the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, Joshua." And I think I would, not that I will ever get the opportunity, but I think if I could have my own personal pep talk with his majesty, I think I would want to say that and to encourage him to draw his strength and courage for the task that he faces as our new king, not from his own resources, not from the counselors that are around him, but ultimately he would draw that from a real living relationship with the real living God. It only struck me recently, I can't remember where I've heard this over the last few days, that actually in terms of praying for Queen Elizabeth, every time we sang the national anthem, we were praying for her. It's a prayer. It's directed to God, and it's for her benefit, for her salvation. And wonderfully, we understand from her many professions of faith, God has answered that prayer. He has saved her. She is with him. Charles spoke about being with Philip, and I'm sure that's a comfort, but that kind of pales into insignificance. She is now with the one who was asked so many times to save her and has now saved her. And I think that's going to help me sing the new national anthem, which will, I guess, take a bit of getting used to and will feel odd and wrong. But to think of it as a prayer for Charles, that he would come to know the reality of a relationship with God in his life and draw strength and courage from that in the same way that his mother so clearly did. So I will be
singing it with gusto.
I'll be singing it with gusto rather than just awkwardness. Going, it might take a little bit of transition, but
yeah, the Six Nations is going to be interesting this year. as we kick off, everyone. Because I think, Rupert, often with that, it's sort of, you know, draw your strength, draw your courage from, you know, not from your own resources, not from the people around you, but from a relationship with God. The Queen never had an audience directed with God, as far as I'm aware. But so, I mean, practically speaking, I mean, how would, you know, if Charles did go about doing that, what would that look like? I mean, how would he approach doing that?
Okay, so let me, thank you, Graham. When Moses is preparing the people for his imminent death, he says, God's going to be with you. Here's a new leader, Joshua. He's going to be with you and God's going to be with him. But then he does another thing that you're not necessarily expecting. He tells Moses to basically write down the words of the law, to that date, the word of God. And that's the thing he says you need to take with you into the future, into the heart, into the center of the life of God's people. And that is how, to answer your question, I think that is how you go about drawing strength and courage from God without a Moses mountaintop experience or a burning bush. I think that's how you do it. As you put his word central in your life, that is, as you open yourself up to its authority, as you read it, as you meditate on it, as you think about it, as you seek to live it as the Queen did, so you allow him to give you his strength, give you his wisdom. There's a fantastic part of her coronation ceremony in 1953, which I would love to think might still be part of Charles's coronation ceremony, I guess, sometime next year. But this is the most extraordinary thing that was said 69 years ago. So they gave an absolutely monster Bible into her hands. And at that point, they said, "Our gracious Queen, to keep your majesty ever mindful of the law and the gospel of God as the rule for the whole life and government of Christian princes, we present you with this book, the most valuable thing that this world affords. Here is wisdom. This is the royal law. These are the lively oracles of God," or "this is the living word of God to you." But I think what we've seen in the kind of opportunities Queen Elizabeth had is that she heard that and she took that on board. That is where she got her wisdom. And I think it is through her reading of the Bible and her discovering the grace and kindness and faithfulness of God there that enabled her to be the queen that she was. And that's not just reserved for royalty. She gets a big book and a big ceremony to go with it. But any of us can just pick up a Bible and start reading it and have exactly the same benefit, the spiritual benefit that she clearly derived from that.
Mm. I think there's something really sort of equalizing about that, isn't there? That, you know, this was Queen Elizabeth II's arguably the greatest monarch has ever been. That was her source of strength and wisdom. And, you know, we've got the same book next to us, right? And and I think there's also something really, you know, very endearingly humble about that. Of, you know, you would look at that woman and think, my goodness, the wisdom and courage and dignity and grace she has. And she's sitting there going, well, you know, I gained this all from this book, right? Yeah.
Well, even now, maybe for King Charles, I'll just hand him an iPhone with the Bible app.
Absolutely. Open. Yeah, yeah, just scroll through.
Just go for it.
I'll take that. I'll take that. Anything that enables him to draw his strength and courage from God. And because you can get that from lots of other places. But the strength and courage that you draw from a real relationship with God is so much surpassing anything else.
Mm.
Back to our royal correspondent. Anything to kind of back that up with what she said and how we see that? Just fact-checking.
No, I think she referenced who Jesus was and what he meant to her a lot over the years. I didn't actually finish answering your question earlier, did I, Graham? You asked me about what this means for the rest of us too and whether she believed that for the rest of us. And she also said in 2008, she referenced so many other people are able to draw inspiration from his life and message and find in him a source of strength and courage. Mm. So yeah, like you say, equalizing. The Queen was someone who wanted this, not just for herself, but for everyone else.
Great. Thanks, guys. It does feel like a watershed.
It does.
For all of us. As Ruth said earlier, it feels precarious. We're just out of a global pandemic. War's still raging in Ukraine. We've got an economic recession looming. We're in the middle of a cost of living and energy crisis. And then we're handed a kind of unproven prime minister 4 days into a job. So it doesn't feel like perfect timing.
No.
So I guess it's just a question for all of us to reflect on is, why shouldn't we be fearful as we look ahead?
Mm. I like to think that the Queen wasn't fearful as she lay in what was her deathbed. Mm. Most of us are not going to be afforded the luxury of a deathbed and have our sons and daughters rush to be by our side. But for all of the luxury that she has around her, for everything, the resources that she had at her fingertips, the Queen could not cheat death. She died on Thursday, but she died peacefully, and she could die peacefully because she trusted that Jesus had defeated death for her. And so whatever we have coming against us, the biggest thing that we can never do on our own is defeat death. But just as Queen Elizabeth trusted that someone had done that for her, we can trust that someone has done that for us. And everything else kind of pales when you think, well, if we don't worry about death, we'll get through this recession.
Yeah. Mm. Thanks, Becca. Yeah. Brie?
I think that's a great, great perspective. And I haven't actually got anything to add. I think if you can face death with hope and faith, then the other challenges that we're facing. And I think hope and faith, self-generated, is not up to the task.
Yeah.
It can get you through a lot, but it tends to crumble in the face of death. But I think hope and faith that is centered on Christ is equal to that task and takes you through that.
It's a shame in a way that, unlike Moses, we didn't have a final address from the Queen, because I think it would have been really interesting to see what she wanted to say to all of us. But
so let me try and give that to you.
Okay, go on.
Perfect.
So, here we go, the Queen.
But this is from the last Christmas broadcast that she gave.
Okay.
In 2021. She said this: Jesus' teachings have been handed down from generation to generation and have been the bedrock of my faith. And then she quotes a Christmas carol: the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. It's funny, until I'd sort of heard that and reflected, I've sung that line so many times, but I don't think I've ever thought, what does it actually mean?
Mm.
But I think she's saying what it means. It means all the hopes that you have, all the fears that you have, Jesus Christ is equal to them, and he is the answer to them.
Yeah.
And she's saying that personally. That is what I have found. So I'd take that as her.
Let's take that.
I'd take that as her final pep talk, preparing us, maybe consciously, unconsciously, for her passing and for what's next.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Let's end on that note. Rue, Becca, thank you very much for joining us on Table Talk.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having us.